Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor to the Wall Street Journal. The headline, China is unhappy with BlackRock's Panama ports deal. What deal is that? Beijing has signaled its displeasure over CK Hutchison Holdings' agreement to sell its majority controlling stake in Panama ports to a BlackRock-led consortium, sending shares in the Hong Kong-based company sharply lower. Commentary by Chinese state-owned Hong Kong newspaper criticized the deal, saying it would result in the Panama Canal being used for political purposes, restricting China's shipping and trade. The opinion piece cited unnamed individuals critical of CK Hutchison as saying the sale is, quote, profit-seeking, and a move, quote, betraying and selling off all Chinese people. We go to Panama immediately. Michael Yan reporting at the Twitter address is Michael_Yan. Michael has watched Panama for years now. He's there recording all the time the comings and goings of this critical state in Central America. You will recall C.K. Hutchison owns a port on one side and a port on the other. There are five facilities. It's two of the five. However, it is a worldwide player in ports. It is owned originally by a zillionaire out of Hong Kong, a senior figure. And because it was listed in the Hong Kong Exchange, it was regarded as a good investment and has been. Well, BlackRock, headed by Larry Fink, has moved in with a big offer taken by Hutchison, congratulated by everyone because it relieved the anxiety of the Trump administration that Panama was vulnerable to Chinese interference. And now, Michael, everything you want in Panama and starting all over again. China says it does, it's unhappy. What does that mean, Michael? Good day to you.
Well, you know, China is the Chinese Communist Party is a professional victim, and professional victims are always predators. They are highly predatory. Also this week in Panama, I'm in Panama right now near the canal. Also this week, a decree was signed and now is official that you can come here and basically be somebody who washed in through the Darien Gap and be allowed to stay. I mean, I published it on my Substack yesterday, translated from Spanish to English. I put the original version up and then also a translation up so people can read it themselves. And so in China, we know in 2023 alone, about more than 25,000 Chinese came through the Darien Gap. And so that's just one year. I could talk about other years as well. But that, I mean, so 25,000 Chinese in one year alone, many of them are staying here, right? So they're getting Chinese, Panamanian citizenship and that sort of thing. They're just slowly doing what China does. They become you, right? They grow over you like kudzu. And now, insofar as the canal goes, which is not far from me, it's right out the window. I was just in the library yesterday across the street from Hutchison Ports, which is, you know, actually Balboa Port, which is operated by Hutchison Ports, which is now being bought by BlackRock, right? Which is actually on the Balboa, the Panama City side of the Panama Canal. And on the other side of that right now, the China Bridge is being built, which will, the landing will be right there at the ports, the Hutchison Ports or BlackRock Ports or whoever buys it, right? And so it's quite interesting. If you look, I put this on Substack with maps and photos. I took a helicopter a couple days ago and flew over it and photographed it and that sort of thing. And it's interesting because this is, you know, Panama is getting, you know, it's getting attacked by from multiple directions. And, you know, basically it's a big, big juicy lamb with a pork chop hanging around its neck, and it's defenseless, and predators want it. And obviously on the Belt and Road Initiative, this is one of the most important places on Earth. And so you've got the United States and China and the Russians have a huge embassy here. you know, Panama Canal, for as long as humans do sea trade, will be a vital, it will be contested. There's just no way around that. It's just so important. And the people who are running it, the canal right now is really unguarded. It's like basically almost zero security. It's really wild. And I went into one of the fire stations a couple months ago, and they only have about half of the gear and men that they need. They were telling me that. That's right beside the canal, right? So right beside the Agua Claras locks. So if the so if there's a fire there, one of these container ships or one of these car carrier ships catches on fire, you know, in the locks, they're not going to be able to put it out. That could destroy the locks, obviously. And so there's just no security here. And obviously we have a lot of enemies. I'm not saying the Chinese. If the Chinese want to take out the canal, that's child's play. With their technology and their abilities, they don't need to be here. They can stand off and do it. But other people, you know, we have so many enemies, nobody can even keep count of them. They have full access to it, right? And it's interesting. I spend a lot of time in the books. You know, you have to spend a lot doing this line of work. You have to spend a lot of time in the books and a lot of time in the field, right? And because they complement each other heavily. And it's interesting when you find that the Japanese and Germans had a detailed plan for attacking the canal in World War II. And actually, a lot of people were surprised that that the Japanese did not attack the Panama Canal, instead went for Pearl Harbor.
Oh, I'm so glad you know that story, Michael. They built a submarine with an aircraft on the deck to blow up one of the locks. It's a wonderful story. The Japanese were inventive right to the end of the war.
I-400. It's called the I-400.
Yes,
in fact, there's a book in the Balboa. And I mean, I just spent like 2 hours with that book. I photographed a lot of it's amazing. But I also found a lot of information about how we were defending it against that attack. John, you know, that submarine, I found a map of where the Japanese planned to go. They were going to fly from the submarine from the Pacific side, fly, because, you know, the submarine would carry three aircraft, fly over Colombia. And so then go take a left and go over the Caribbean, take another left and line up and go right through Cologne and hit the locks and then go back to the submarine. Now, a commander advised that be a suicide attack. Obviously, it never happened. But actually, there's you know, information about the Chinese spies. Like, for instance, they had one spy down in Darien. He had a lumber mill and his family was down there and all that stuff. And then there was another spy down in Darien in a remote place on a remote mountaintop, which is still remote actually today. And he was using that for his communications about what the spies were seeing up here. They had spies that were fishermen up in Costa Rica. They had spies pretending to be farmers. And, you know, they were, because part of the attack, they wanted part of the attack to come from the submarine, part to come from Costa Rica, and part from Venezuela and Colombia. So there was different, they were going to come at you from planes, trains, and automobiles, you know. And so the Americans, I found some of our defenses. This is a funny story, John. You got to let me tell this. There was this one unit, this would be 1942. I just read this a couple days ago in the library. There was a chemical unit here, an American chemical unit, the Army, and they had all these smoke pots up and down the canal, right? Just huge amount of smoke pots. So if a Japanese or German attack was coming, they would sound sirens and everybody would light their smoke pots to occlude the target. So it'd be, you know, a smoke cover from over the canal. And they had so many smoke pots, you know, in all directions, so that no matter which way the wind was blowing, you were going to cover, you know, it was going to be hard to see the targets. And they had about a 15-minute warning. And so the plan was, according to this book that I was reading, was to, if the central alarm went off, then all these other little units up and down the canal that were out in the jungles and whatnot with all their smoke pots would then the first thing they'd do was sound their alarms too, their sirens. They would twist the thing, you know, and then they would light their smoke pots, right? And so this is where it gets funny. One of the young NCOs, he decided that he thought that his troops, he was a young, in his 20s NCO, and he was a sergeant, And he didn't like the way some of his soldiers were going off and getting drunk and chasing prostitutes instead of staying by their smoke pots. And so he sounded his alarm just to scare his guys to come back. But what ended up happening was all the alarms then went into sync, and everybody started sounding their alarms up and down the canal. And they had, like, I think 79 fighter aircraft suddenly up in the sky. This is our side, right? Ships were doing evasive maneuvers, and the army was, everybody was rushing to the canal, the Marines and the army. Anyway, so he didn't get busted. They actually ended up sending the guy to OCS. It's a very funny story. So, you know, so there was the, you know, the defense here for the Japanese and German attacks, which never came, but they were going to do it. The Japanese definitely were hardcore. They built submarines just for that. And the submarines, the I-400, they wanted it to have a range of 40,000 miles. You know, the Earth is about 24,000 miles around. So they wanted to have 40,000 miles. I think they added a third airplane and it ended up being like 37,000 miles or something like that range. So this was a serious, you know, when you're fighting the Japanese, you know, you give them time. One of the problems the Japanese had, though, is they didn't have enough resources. So they didn't. That's why they're one of the reasons why their submarine building was slow.
Michael, the other detail that I love about the Panama is the Humphrey Bogart movie Across the Pacific. Do you recall?
That's right.
Yes, with Mary Astor as the female lead. It's a very complicated story, and it never actually crosses the Pacific. But the Japanese are the villains. And it was made at the beginning of the war. John Huston started to direct it, but then he went off and became a U.S. Army Signal Corps filmmaker. He was on Wake Island when it was initially attacked. So he went to the real war while they were making the movie about Across the Pacific, and the Japanese again were the attackers. All we have to do is switch the Japanese with the Chinese, and we've got the plot ready to go.
Actually, when you read old, like I found another old book, not too old. Anyway, I'll have to send you some of these. But there, you know, the things that we're saying about China now, we were saying about Japan more recently, that Japan was going to take the canal economically. And so there's even a book about it. I found it in the library. Quite interesting. You know, I found this other book yesterday. There's four of the books, actually. It's a passenger list for the people that landed at San Francisco, right? And so, and it's, you know, it's four books, and I spent a couple of hours just going through those passenger lists as a point of interest. And it's called San Francisco Ship Passenger List by Louis Rasmussen. And volume three, which is the list from November 7th, 1851 to June 17th, 1852, he lists this. Check this one out. So the ship called the Challenge, it's a clipper ship, it says here, arrived in San Francisco on April 22nd, 1852. The captain was John Land, and it deported from Hong Kong, China. And then the passage, he says, was 33 days from Hong Kong, China. This marks the quickest passage between the coast of China and northwestern America yet recorded in the annals of modern voyages. And then it goes on to talk about that there was 553 Chinese immigrants on that ship. It goes on to talk about the winds and all these other things. But at the end, it's 553 Chinese immigrants, all unidentified, all in good health, no deaths during the passage.
The vulnerability of the Panama Canal, you've identified it as completely vulnerable to sabotage, to interference. I think part of the concern has to be that it's vulnerable to influence peddling. And what is an example of influence peddling? The Chinese Communist Party saying it's unhappy because it's been sold for $22.8 billion to BlackRock. Now, Michael, what are the Chinese thinking? Why is this a bad deal? They're supposed to be capitalists. The highest bidder takes it. If they wanted it so much, outbid him.
Well, you know, the seven strategic choke points. This is the problem. See, Panama's caught in a pickle. Panama's nakedly violating our treaty. I mean, there is this canal is definitely in danger. There's no question about that. And China is definitely behaving as an enemy of the United States. I mean, they're in violation of the treaty. You could easily make that case. And the bottom line is, if there's a will to make the case will be made. And so they're building a bridge right across over. I'm looking at the photo I took from the helicopter 2 days ago right now. And by the way, you can see Trump, the old Trump Hotel, from the China Bridge. You can actually see it's right on the other side of Angkon Hill, or the Angkon Hills between those two. But you can see it right from a certain angle. But what I'm getting to is this is much bigger than just Panama. This is global. This is China's Belt and Road Initiative. Like, there's a book called, I've mentioned this to you before, China's Belt and Road Initiative, Panama, right? And I've published that book on my Substack numerous times. And it's a book worth reading if you're interested in what I'm thinking and so many of the things that I see over here. I spend a lot of time in the books and a lot of time talking with the key people and a lot of time on the ground, you know, up in the air and in the boats and looking at things. And it's very clear that China, like, I just spent 2 months in Argentina. I was not on vacation. I was looking at China's Belt and Road Initiative and other things going on in Argentina. Like, there, for instance, China is building a bioceanic corridor down there, right? And so Masako Ganaha and I were down there looking at the routes and checked out one of the Chinese trains and that sort of thing. And so this is all connected. This is not separate stuff. If you look at this from a strategic perspective, Panama being one of the seven vital naval choke points in the world. Of course, Suez is another one. Bab el-Mandeb, Strait of Hormuz, Strait of Malacca. We were just over at Strait of Malacca last year. And, you know, over if you change this conversation over to Asia, you'll see the same things going on over there. For instance, China is working on building a train through Thailand right now, and it's making a lot of progress. We were just looking at it when we were in Thailand last year, and they're going to build a corridor on the Kra Isthmus. That's the isthmus between Malaysia and Thailand. And I first looked at this in 2014, thinking they might build a canal. It looks like now they're going to start with a train. But now keep in mind, China is also building a canal over in Cambodia. And that goes from the Mekong River, which is like the Mississippi of Asia, right? They're building a canal that goes through Cambodia through the Gulf of Siam. And this is very important because that will then be able to connect with the corridor across the Kra Isthmus. If you have a map in your wall or in your head, like I do, I've got a map in my head. So when I talk about things, I can see the map. But because I go to all these places, it kind of, you know, imprints the map in your mind. But so I'm sorry if I'm losing people on the directions here. But so the bottom line is the Mekong River, the river delta, dumps out there in Vietnam. So Vietnam controls all the shipping through up and down the Mekong River, because when the Mekong goes into Vietnam and goes out the river delta there, I mean, if you want to go up the Mekong River, you got to go through Vietnam up and down, right? So China's building a corridor that'll bypass that, which will be go through Cambodia. They're working on it now. Now, that could devastate or cause great damage to the Vietnamese economy. So how will this play out? I do not know. But you can see these routes are evolving. They constantly are. This is nothing new. As you know, you've talked about the Roman days and how they built, how many thousands of miles of roads did they build, you know, and the sea routes and all that. It's basically just the same thing, scaled up. We're beyond clipper ships now, and the trains go pretty fast. And so that's what it's down to. I'm watching this all over the world, and Panama is one of the vital terrains of these wars. Rotterdam Harbor over in Netherlands is also very important. I went to Rotterdam a few times, and I went to Shanghai as well. The train goes all the way across from Shanghai and other parts of China all the way down to Spain and down to Rotterdam, right? Rotterdam, the biggest harbor in Europe, right? And the second biggest harbor in Europe is Antwerp, just south of Rotterdam. So all these things, Rotterdam, that's where the Rhine River dumps out. And the Rhine River, again, that's like the Mississippi of Europe, right? And the Rhine River dumps out there in Rotterdam. And that's where that giant harbor is. It's worth fighting wars for. And China has built a train to that as well. China's, you know, put significant influence, as do others, on there's a big, you know, a battle of the oligarchs going on there in Europe as there are in the Americas as well. So all about, you know, when it comes to Panama, people have dreamed of making a passage between the seas ever since Columbus. He was sailing up down the Panama coast in, what, 1502, I think, 1503. And then Balboa started the first Western town in the Americas, not including out in the islands in Dominican, but in the on the mainland of North or South America, the first town was in the Darien. It's called Santa Maria La Antigua del Darien, right? So Balboa opened that little settlement in 1510, and he did that because he wanted to make a passage between the seas, right? And Balboa, of course, is the one who found the Pacific, quote unquote, found the Pacific and claimed it for Spain because he spotted it from a hilltop down there in the Darien area. And then eventually he got beheaded in Darien at a place called Acala. So he got beheaded at Acala. And actually, I've got one of his heads right here because his head's on all these Panamanian coins. They use the dollar, but they have Balboa dollars, which are coins, but they use the U.S. dollar.
Let's come back to C.K. Hutchinson.
Oh, C.K., go ahead. Yeah. Sorry, I went off on a tangent. All right.
No, it's all right. You've been reading books. I understand that. Yeah. Your measure, will Panama collapse to the demands from China to claw back the deal?
I don't think so. And why do I? Okay, this is my estimate.
The port is owned by C.K. Hutchinson. C.K. Hutchinson is controlled out of Hong Kong. Panama doesn't own anything, but really you have to do business with them if you're going to build a port there. Otherwise, what's the point? It's their territory. They've got to give you permission. There was some question when the deal was re-upped last year, a couple of years ago. I don't have the details. Do you think Panama is going to collapse? You've spent more time in Panama than Balboa. What do you think?
Well, I do think that this country is being destabilized. I think you may see violence on Monday, actually. Let's see if that becomes true or not. So today's Saturday.
That's about the copper mine, right?
No, that's actually not about the copper mine, although that'll be related. It's about Social Security.
Oh, okay.
That's tied
up in the copper mine, right.
Yeah, definitely related. They made a decision on Friday, yesterday, about the Social Security thing, and people are really upset about it because they're at the end of the day, again, Panama is a juicy lamb. It's got a pork chop around its neck. And at the end of the day, it's not going to be able to withstand. It's not sophisticated like, say, Singapore. It's not a sophisticated country like Japan or Taiwan, right? This is an incredibly corrupt country, even as corrupt countries go. And therefore, it doesn't have any base of power that's not just based on money, right? Or guns at some point. And at ultimately, it's clear that the United States is now, I think Hegseth, Secretary of Defense Hegseth, I think will be here in roughly the first week of April into Panama. I think he's going to go to Darien as well. I think we're going to open maybe three bases. I'm unclear on that, but probably about three. Of course, our special forces are here right now. I'm down there where they're at all the time, down in Darien. I mean, they're always here. I mean, our special forces and the Panamanian forces work together a lot, as do the SEALs and whatnot. So they have a great working relationship. So that's nothing new. And now that one thing that's really angered a lot of Panamanians in the last few days, about the last 48 hours, is Panama announced about two or three days ago that they're going to buy some Super Tucano aircraft, the tactical fighter aircraft, actually the kind that I wish we had when I was in Afghanistan. I wanted those. But these are really nice little aircraft, better than those P-51s of World War II, and they're prop driven, but they're quite serious. But the package deal, as reported, is about, I think, $180 million. And the Panamanians are like, what, $180 million for aircraft, you know, the Super Tucanos and these tactical resupply aircraft. While they're going to, you know, announce that you have to work longer and get less Social Security, that's just not going to play out well. And there's the frictions from the canal, and people are increasingly angry you know, basically at anything that pops up on their screen. One of the things that the Chinese are good about is just being kind of quiet. Whereas, you know, so when you pop up when everybody's already angry and they see your face, they'll be angry at you too, regardless, right? But Panamanians in general, many of the Panamanians I speak with, which is every day I speak with Panamanians, obviously, and a lot of the, I would say, roughly, let's say to be directionally accurate, maybe half of the Panamanians actually want us to come back. I mean, they say it all the time. They tell me that every day. Panamanians are like, "Yeah, please come back, but you know, be gentle about it." You know, they a lot of them want us to come back because they're not getting anything out of the canal. They don't see it bleeding down to the average person.
What I'm taking is that you think they'll collapse to Chinese pressure. You do think they'll collapse.
I don't know. If they collapse to Chinese pressure, I think the U.S. military will come in.
All right.
I think that's what will happen. Yeah.
Because the Chinese are unhappy, and that doesn't say that it's going to be quick.
Yeah. Let's see if they collapse or not, because, you know, the United States military clearly is preparing, and they've been preparing. You know, Trump just made a statement about, you know, telling the military to, you know, make plans, but they've obviously been prepared. You know, they landed a bunch of C-17s a few months ago.
Right.
It was quite interesting.
We did that already. We did it once for,
yeah,
once upon a time when we took out the boss and put him in jail forever. So it's, let's put it this way. You think it's credible that they would collapse to the Chinese? Credible.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It is credible. It is credible that they would collapse. Very credible. Very credible.
Will you be there in a week?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I just got word about some things, so I'm probably going to delay my trip and stay here a little longer. I mean, this is, you know, Panama, there's a reason. I've spent almost a year here since Biden was installed. And because I recognize that this is going to become something very important, and it's not something that you can come in and learn in a week. No matter how smart you are, you can't come here and learn this in a week or even a few weeks or a month. You have to really do a lot of study to try to get a handle on what's going on here. And so that's what I've been working on for about a year here since Biden was installed.
Michael Yan, and the Twitter address is Michael_Yan. And he will post this podcast. This is the Friends of History Debating Society speaking to Panama City from southern New England, where spring has arrived. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.